ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today I'm going to talk about fridge magnet philosophy. Do you know what fridge magnet philosophy is? Okay, sit and be enlightened. I also didn't know what fridge magnet philosophy was until I came across the phrase recently. And actually it's not difficult to understand what it means. On people's fridges, they put a little magnetic, what would you call it? Strip or whatever, and it has you can't fit many words on it. They're just a few words and some philosophy is there in a few words. So it was a scornful reference to people who indulge in fridge magnet philosophy. See, it's just very short things like you are what you are, life is what you make of it, be here now, short things. And we could also add to that bumper stickers. Bumper stickers are not usually philosophical. They're usually more joking or... there's not a culture of bumper stickers in this country anyway. And now there's the whole culture of internet memes, in which you have a little picture and then a few words. So the whole idea is this reference to fridge magnet philosophy ridicules people who think that they're very deep, but they're actually very shallow. Now, of course, even the prospect of having some kind of philosophy, you could say, well, that's a step above the average. Because most people, it's ahara nidra bhaya maitun, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. But they don't even get as far as... That's a kind of philosophy, actually. That could be called Epicureanism or hedonism, if you take it too far. Well, according to hedonists, it wouldn't be too far. But anyway... But most people don't even get as far as formulating it into a formula. Eat, sleep, drink, be merry, and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead, which Srila Prabhupada sometimes used to quote is also scornfully. Actually, there are many such sayings which can be very deep. There are in the Vedic literature. Smara nityam anityatvam. Always remember that everything is temporary. Not everything, but almost everything. It's one line taken from a verse. Also, we have we can take one line of instruction. Mame kam sharanang raja, the essential teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. There are so many. Mame kam sharanang raja. Krishna says, surrender, take shelter in me. Only Krishna te kila cheshtitam. Actually, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's written in Sanskrit, tadarte kila cheshtitam, and simplified in Bengali and in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna te kila cheshta. All endeavors should be for the sake of Krishna. So that's short and very meaningful. What about this one? Kirtaniya sada harihi. Lord Hari is always to be glorified. Or in other words, that we should always glorify Hari. There are also standard Vedic sutra works, the Brahma Sutras, beginning with Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now we should inquire into Brahma. Then comes the question, what is Brahma? Then comes the next sutra, Janmadhya Sayataha, that from which everything emanates, etc. That is Brahma. So there's the Brahma Sutras, Yoga Sutras, Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Now we shall discuss about Yoga. Panini Sutras. The Panini Sutras, they're not so much philosophical. They're grammar rules, which the grammar rules can be memorized in sutras. Sutra means just short, make it short. And so many Dharma Sutras. And we have in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has given a definition of eloquence. Mitang cha sarang cha vacho hi vagmita. Eloquence is essential truths expressed just mitam hi saram, just giving the essence. But the point is that there is a whole philosophy behind it. It's not that you just say a slogan and then that's it. But not this, that you look in your fridge while you're looking for some butter or maybe something more horrible if you're a non-vegetarian. And you have a little thought is there, which anyway, once you put it on and then you've seen it three or four times, you don't even see it anymore. You just forget it. Forget that it's there. So what is being ridiculed in the reference to fridge magnet philosophy is the attitude of living by slogans and not taking up the deep study and reflection meant to understand them. Shallowness, being apparently philosophical, but actually shallow. Oh, another important point is that just because something's in a slogan or a fridge net philosophy meme, it doesn't mean that it's valid. It can be short and completely bogus. Here's a common one. Jato mod tato pat. There you go. Only four words. Jato mot, as many paths as there are. Sorry, jato mot, as many opinions as there are. Tato pot, that many paths. Well, in one sense, it's true. But the connotation, the way it is understood or meant to be understood, is that all paths lead to the same goal. All opinions. Any opinion is as good as any other. It's a call to relativism. The thing is, there's no deep philosophy behind it. But the idea is that the truth is one, and there are as many paths as you can imagine can go to it. Now, if we examine that, it's not valid, and it's not that all paths lead to the same goal. Actions have consequences. You can't just say, ideas have consequences. There's an important book by that name. Important, how important? Well, in the world of philosophy, however important that world is, for those who are interested in Ahara Nidra Bhai Maitun, philosophy has no interest to them. So that is that attitude of just saying things which sound very philosophical, but actually you don't understand the whole import behind them. The rigorous study is not taken to understand them, or if one is actually a philosopher, then it should affect one's life also. Not to be an armchair philosopher. Many years ago in England, I remember that some of our devotees, they were going to universities to place standing orders for Srila Prabhupada's books in the university library. So they'd been in Oxford and had met one of the famous in their own small circle, professor of Indian studies and writes things about Indian philosophy and Krishna and all this. Where did they find him? In the bar. In the bar means drinking alcohol. Well, that's got nothing to do with high philosophy. In Richard Dawkins' most famous book, The God Delusion, which I read cover to cover, and by his estimation, by reading his book, I didn't become enlightened and get rid of the God delusion. I'm still in the delusion, according to him. So he addressed there the question that, well, if you don't believe in God or in anything supernatural or anything beyond matter, unless you're a philosophical if you're a philosophical materialist, then what's the meaning to life? There's no meaning in life. So he said that he was discussing that with some of his friends as they were in a pub eating their meal, and then they came to the conclusion, well, we're having a good meal. We had a good meal, so that's the meaning. And the pig also has a good meal. So, no higher than a pig. Pig philosophy. Actually, that God Delusion book, I don't recommend reading it because it's... I mean, even if you think you're going to get some good atheistic arguments, they're no good atheistic. It's really pathetic, his attempts at philosophy. It's really poor. You would have expected something more from such a famous person. So some more convincing arguments. Anyway... it requires vigorous study to understand them properly. Otherwise, you may have very good things to say, but without understanding it properly, it can be very wrongly applied. Here's another one. Harir Nama Eva Kevalam. You've all heard that. In Kali Yuga, there's no other way but chanting the holy names of Lord Hari. Well, I spent several years in Bengal, in Bangladesh especially, as well as West Bengal. And there, it was very well known, the Vaishnav culture was there long before ISKCON came. It's been there since the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the Hare Nama verse, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, is well known. As is the saying, Guru Kripa Hi Kevalam. So they take Kevalam, that's the only thing to mean that, well, it doesn't matter anything else you do. You can eat fish. Especially you can eat fish. Because Harinam, that's enough. That's the only thing. So if you do that, everything's complete. So then you could make an argument, no, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't eat fish. And then comes the argument. The argument, oh, he's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's so great, he's so exalted, how can we do what he does? As if it was imperative to eat fish. So this fridge magnet philosophy, this little sandwich someone typed out somewhere, it is a scornful swipe at people who deliberately try to come up with sayings that, or people who like to quote sayings that sound very deep, but actually they're not really deep. They're just trying to sound deep. Many years ago, when I was just beginning, in the beginning stages of my research on the book which I eventually published on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When I was staying in Udupi, I was working on that. I was working on that for many years, actually. So I spent a lot of time in Udupi, grace of Ananda Gauranga. Das, not Adhikari at that time. So it was quite a long time ago. So I was working on that. So in the early days of working on that book, there was a devotee from Belfast, Northern Ireland, whose name was John. Can't remember, his second name was a Muslim name. The devotees used to call him Muslim John. So he told me that there was a small book which he gave me to read, which I didn't bother reading. And the whole The essence of the book was, I just had a quick look at the preface, and it was written in a tongue-in-cheek style, that you, if you can read, without having to bother studying so many different philosophers, if you just go through this little book, then when you're at parties, you can impress others by sounding as if you know about philosophy. You can drop a few lines. You can drop a few lines here and there, just like you could say, cogito ergo sum, said Descartes, I think, therefore I exist. Oh, and people think, oh, he must be a great philosopher to have studied that. And you might be thinking, hearing me say that, oh, he must be a great philosopher to say that. But you don't know any other damn thing that Descartes said. But he makes you sound as if you know a lot. What else did Descartes do? What else do we have? Cartesian geometry, derived from the Greeks, derived from the Indians. you may quote the name of a book from Nietzsche, Thus Spake Zarathustra. You never read the book, you haven't got a clue what's in the book, but you just quote it and it sounds like, oh, you really know a lot about philosophy. So it was tongue-in-cheek. It was making fun of people who tried to make out that, I think that was the purpose of the book, it tried to make out that people who make a show of knowing philosophy, but actually they don't. Who can actually know it anyways? I mean, there are people, and there have been many people in those departments of philosophy at universities who literally spend their whole life studying one philosopher, Kant especially, Kant, Hegel, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada's one godbrother, was fond of quoting Hegel. He liked Hegelian dialectics, and he liked his saying, live to die, so he'd studied him to some extent. So, and even in the Western world, if you talk about philosophy, what they mean by philosophy is everything that began with the Greeks. They don't include, just like if they say civilization, it means everything that began with the Greeks. The fact that there have been civilizations in far more ancient than European civilization in China and India and, believe it or not, in Africa and South America, that doesn't count, because civilization means people who speak languages derived from Latin and Greek, and anything else can't really be counted as civilization. And the Indian people think that also. That's why they all like to learn English, because it's civilized, right? Canada is not a civilized language. It's not for civilized people. It's people like Madhvacharya and they couldn't. Well, I actually probably didn't speak Canada. He spoke Sanskrit at home, and then Tulu he would have spoken. I don't know if he spoke Canada. Anyway, making a snide swipe at the idea that you have to know English to be civilized. But Muslim John, just trying to think of his second name, he told me that in that book, there's a little section that, when I talk about philosophy, I'm talking about the kind of things that they, this Kant, beginning with Socrates and before him, Plotinus and all these. So I said, whatever you do, don't ever try to speak philosophy with a Hare Krishna devotee. We're not talking about that kind of philosophy. Don't even bother trying to talk with them, he said. It'll drive you nuts. So, what's the conclusion of this little discussion of fridge magnet philosophy? Well, philosophy is important, obviously. Without that, again I'll quote, Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samanime tat pashubhya naranam. The humans and the animals have in common eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Then what's the difference between a human and an animal? The version that Srila Prabhupada always quoted was dharmena hina pashubhya naranam, without dharma, very roughly translated as religion. Without religion, a human being is an animal, but there is another version, jnanena hina pashubhya naranam, Ganena hina. No, what does it come? Ganena. Dharmena. What is it? Dharmo hitesham adiko vishesham. In the humans, the special prerogative of human life is dharma, or in another version, jnana, knowledge. Therefore, dharmena hina or jnanena hina pashubhena ranam. Therefore, a human who doesn't have religion or knowledge is an animal. Knowledge here, in the sense of higher knowledge, because the animals also have knowledge. The birds know how to build their nests, how to find food, how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So here in this context, knowledge means knowledge beyond eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Can be roughly said to be philosophy. But philosophy really in the best sense of the term, atato brahma jignasa. Now we should inquire into the transcendence, that which is beyond simply eating, sleeping, and mating and defending. So the conclusion is that we should be philosophical, but don't be superficial. Srila Prabhupada has kindly given us so many books to read, so much knowledge, so much philosophy. And practically every line of Prabhupada's book could be made into a fridge magnet philosophy. But you really have to read to imbibe it. And it's not just meant to be something to be reflected on, armchair philosophy, but it's something which is vital and required in our life, which we have to adopt. Actually, what we find in Srila Prabhupada's books, it's far more than anything else that goes on in the name of philosophy. Far more than anything that will ever go on in the name of philosophy. So, what is fridge magnet? I looked up fridge magnet, and what do you know? Found a few fridge magnets for sale on the internet. Not that I'm going to buy any, but you can see some of their sayings by looking at that. Okay, here are some. Just some. Starting off with Socrates. The only true wisdom is in knowing you know nothing. Sounds good? Well, it's contradictory. Because if you know you know, you can't know that you know nothing. Because if you know that you know nothing, you know something. So it's self-contradictory. Sorry, Socrates, that one didn't do too good. Although it's still on a fridge magnet, how long? 2,300 years after he drank that famous cup of hemlock. Sorry, I don't know if that helped him at all, that he's still featured on fridge magnets. And probably the translation is not completely accurate either, because the Greek... Of course, we don't even know what Socrates said, because we only got him via Plato. But anyway, the only true wisdom is in knowing you know nothing. But that, apart from the fact that it presumes that you know nothing, it also presumes that he knows what true wisdom is, right? So it's a double own goal, self goal or whatever it's called. It's a double kicking yourself in the head. That won't stand the Vedic version. You should actually know. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna... See, that's a lot of difference between Bhagavad Gita and Zen Buddhism and all this kind of thing. Well, Krishna says, Jnanam te ham savijnanam idam bhakshyam yasheshataha yajgyatva neha bhuyo nyajgyata vyama vashishyate. Krishna says, I will now give you that knowledge and specialized knowledge, by knowing which there will remain nothing further to know. It's not that we should know nothing. Here the sense of knowing obviously is more than knowing, again, just like the animals know how to eat. So everyone knows something. To be sentient means there is some kind of knowledge. But here it means to know... Yeah, to know who we are, why we're here, what we're doing, what we should be doing, how to find true happiness, Anandam Brahma, the absolute truth is all bliss. So it's really, this is a real, this saying, the only true wisdom is in knowing you know, the only true wisdom is in knowing that you know nothing. I could add the word that here. It really confines us within this material sphere. You can't go beyond that. If you accept this as a fact, which it would be foolish to do so. Then there's a saying from Heidegger, to be is to do. Okay. What exactly does it mean? It sounds like one of those things where you read it and it sounds good, but what does it mean? What does it mean to be? Well, we can look at the Gita again. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nahi kaschit kshanam api jatu tishtat ya karma krit. That everyone has to do something at every moment, but there are things that be, they exist, just like this pen doesn't do anything. Even if it writes, it does so only instrumentally. So there's an own goal for Heidegger also. Maybe if we found a philosopher, we could discuss it in more depth and say, what does he really mean to say to be is to do? Maybe, but why study so much? As I say, people that study their whole life Kant, and then some other philosopher will spend their whole life studying Kant, and they'll come to different conclusions about the same philosopher. But why study all these people who have very active and developed minds? But Socrates, at the end of it, he says he knows, more or less he's saying, I know nothing. His qualification is to know nothing. But really, the qualification should be to know. Better understanding of philosophy is to first of all understand what requires to be known and then pursue that. It's the wind in the trees making the rain fall. It's an illusion that it's raining. Is it raining now?
No.
No. You're all sure it's raining? Sounds like it's raining because it has been raining and the wind is making it, the water which is on the leaves fall down, so it sounds like it rained. Is it raining now? No. You're wrong. In the world somewhere today,
yes.
At this present time, it must be raining. This is the kind of thing that philosophers or nitpickers, what's that, hair splitters, they waste their lives with. Okay, here's something from Aristotle, the philosopher. He used to be called the philosophy, the philosopher. He was considered the philosopher, as if there was no other. It is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. Okay. That's not bad. It's pretty good. I mean, who am I? But I'm on the basis of having learned at the feet of Srila Prabhupada, I can say that you can understand a thought, but entertain a thought. Again, you'd have to go back to the original language, because to entertain a thought, the concept of entertaining a thought sounds like something very very much wrapped up in the English language. How would you say that in Hindi? To entertain a thought. It means you can think about it without accepting it. You could say manan karna, you could say like that. That's from Sanskrit and also manan. The shravana, manan, nididhyasanam. But it doesn't really give the same idea, the same. So, to entertain a thought without accepting it, try to understand it. Well, in Vedic dialectics, that's always there. You study, just like Jiva Goswami studied Mayavad. so you could understand it better for defeating it. Yesterday evening, we were talking about the Kumarilabhata, the Mimamsaka philosopher who studied Buddhism for the sake of defeating it. Well, that's a bit of... Anyway, those who know do, those that understand teach. It's difficult to understand exactly what it means without the whole concept behind it. That's why if you just get and stick it on your fridge, not that we have fridges here, but exactly what it means, you don't know. There is a saying which I heard from one of my teachers at school that you study something in the university, and if you can't get a, if you're not good enough to get a job in the job competition, then you become a teacher. So the people who are the worst in the subject, they become the teachers because they couldn't get any other better job. He was a biology teacher. He also told me that he liked the job because you have plenty of holidays and short hours. That was one of his main reasons for not that he had any burning desire to teach others. The point there, we can take this, that those who understand, they teach. Yeah, it's the in Vedic culture, it's the duty of persons who have learned to teach others. It's not enough simply to learn for yourself, but you're duty-bound to teach others. There are those who say, no gurus, no more gurus, but every Brahmin is supposed to be a guru. Everyone is supposed, whatever they've learned, they're supposed to pass it on to the next generation. Here's one from Nietzsche, the great philosopher who became what would nowadays be called clinically insane. If he, without music, life would be a mistake. Okay, chant Hare Krishna. That's music. Yeah, but these little they're almost like cliches. Interesting thoughts, but some of them could be adopted in Krishna consciousness, although there's no real need because we have everything complete in the Vedic culture, but it's like a bunch of zeros. If you say without life, without music, life would be a mistake. Yeah, but what kind of music? Just to have music that you can enjoy, what's the point? Huh? To be is to do. Okay, you can sit around and discuss that, but to do what? What are we doing? Entertain a thought. Well, what kind of thoughts? The point is, there's no clear philosophy. It's just some thoughts which are thrown out into the big ocean of human thought. Nowadays we have mass education and the mass communication by the internet. So you have mass internet philosophy with all kinds of people thinking that, yes, internet philosophers, they have to say something. Everyone's got something to say. It's a big pandemonium or babble of people speaking so many things that can. The word babble, have you heard the word babble? It means a lot of people talking so you can't make out what anyone's saying. It comes from the Bible story of the Tower of Babel, which according to the Hebrew Bible, long, long ago, as all good stories begin, there was only one language in the world. They didn't say what the language was. Was it Yiddish? Unlikely. Ancient Hebrew, maybe. Sanskritum? More likely. But then God saw that the people are all becoming very proud. Oh, and they wanted to build a tower to go up to heaven. without having to be good, they just go to heaven with a tower. Sounds something like Ravana, doesn't it? Building a staircase to heaven. Or... So then God, what did he do? He made everyone speak different languages, and then they couldn't understand each other. And that's how all the different languages originated. And then when they're all talking, because it's all like no one could understand anyone else, and it became a babble, incoherence. There are so many. Great thoughts from the great thinkers. Here's one from Voltaire. If you grow up in France, you'll have heard the name Voltaire. French speaking, I believe he was Swiss. Because in France, they actually teach, it's a compulsory subject in the schools, philosophy. Don't know if it helps them much, but still they're going on with eating, sleeping, mating, and defending as the main goal of life. Here's what it's saying from Voltaire, French philosopher, supposed to be. Philosopher. No snowflake in an avalanche ever feels responsible. Get the meaning of that? No snowflake in an avalanche ever feels responsible. It's something similar to the straw that broke the camel's back. See, if you put so much straw on a camel's back, the camel, his backbone will snap, especially if he doesn't get enough vitamin D. Then his bone mass will become weak. So if you put one straw on a camel's back, it won't break. There's no question of breaking the camel's back. He won't even feel it. If you put two, he won't feel it. If you put three, if you put 100, it's still 100 straws won't feel like anything sitting. But if you say that a bundle of straws, if it's too big, it'll break the camel's back, then there must be some point between zero straws, one straw, two straw. There must become a point where you put one straw and it breaks the camel's back. That's the idea. So it's a saying in English, the straw that breaks the camel's back. That just when something just gets too much and then you flip out. You tolerate and tolerate and tolerate. And then it may be just some small thing, and then you go ballistic. You lose your temper. It becomes too much for you. And someone may wonder, why is he getting so angry over such a little thing? But it's an accumulation of so many things, and then you just can't take it anymore. So in an avalanche, you know what an avalanche is? An avalanche means on a hill, then all the stones start falling down. It happens in the Himalayas. When you're driving up to Badrinath, it's quite common that the road gets blocked by an avalanche because one stone falls in the mountain, one stone falls, then another stone falls, and then or one big rock gets dislodged. And then a whole bunch of other rocks which got dislodged, then a whole bunch of stones fall down. That's an avalanche, and it breaks the, blocks the road. Or in Europe, I believe this is a French word taken from the French Alps, or whatever, Massif Central, or whatever it is, that when snow, there's snow builds up on the side of the mountain, and more and more and more snow, and if it gets too much, then a whole bunch of snow falls down. And again, it can block the road or kill people or whatever. So one snowflake doesn't cause an avalanche. It means many snowflakes. But when you get many, it causes an avalanche. So then it just one snowflake. Of course, there may be other factors also. But no snowflake ever feels responsible. Of course, the snowflake doesn't feel responsible because the snowflake is insentient, as far as we know. But the point he's making is that, somehow or other, I'm often giving the example of Nazi Germany. I guess it's because in the consciousness of we who grew up in late 20th century Europe, We're often reminded of the horrors of the Nazi regime. So what happened in Germany, the mass of people became mobilized to do all kinds of horrible things. Mass killing of Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, sick people, deformed people, and their wars. They had socialists, communists. So many got killed. So the common people enthusiastically participated in these atrocities. So a common person who subscribes to this may not think, well, I'm very responsible. I'm not responsible. I'm just doing what everyone else does. I'm just a small guy. It's not me who's to blame. But Voltaire's making the point that it's a cumulative effort. And we have all over the world mass animal slaughter. Of course, no one even thinks it's wrong. Let me qualify. Many people don't even think it's wrong. So anyway, I'm talking about so many things here, and maybe you can continue this tomorrow. How different thoughtful people come up with thoughtful reflections on the world and the human nature, which is considered to be philosophy. A lot of it is superficial, because unless we well, that's one of the most famous sayings, we'll come to that, the examine life. Unless we examine what is the real necessity, simply to discuss the human condition without understanding who we are, that's the first question. Sanatana Goswami, when he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asked the perfect question, or the exact proper question that everyone should ask. Ke ami kene amai jare tapatroi. Who am I? And why am I suffering in this world? Eha nahi jani kemone hito hoy. I don't know this, how I can get my ultimate benefit. So that we have in the Vedic literature also, jignyasu shreya uttamam. One should inquire about the highest benefit. So philosophy really begins there, because after all, life is short, and simply to reflect on the human condition, it's a waste of time, actually, in many ways. It's a diversion. It's just something like this. We're in a prison. We're going to be shot tomorrow. And we know we're going to be executed tomorrow. We know there's some, or we have some suspicion that there's some way we can escape. But instead we discuss about the architecture of the prison. Or that it's too cold in this prison cell. Or we don't like the prison food. Does it make any sense? There is a possibility to escape. But instead we discuss superfluous things. So a lot that goes on in the name of philosophy is superfluous. And even if we discuss, well, it's very bad that it's very bad that so many people, they contributed. The Nazism was a mass movement. Okay, we should consider that, how that cannot happen again. Snowflake in an avalanche discussion. But even that is subordinate to the highest question, because if we understand this highest question, then we won't act on the lower platform. Why should the German people at that time buy into Hitler's philosophy? He had a philosophy. Mein Kampf. my message, his philosophy or his teaching. He had some reasoning to it, however twisted it might be. There was some kind of reasoning that we're Germans and we're the special race, and we should do whatever we need to do to fulfill our destiny, to do what we need to do for our own being. It's animalistic philosophy, just like a lion kills another animal. I'm a lion, I'm killing you. So the lion doesn't think about the feelings of the deer who he kills, or the deer's children whom he'll feel distressed. The lion doesn't consider such a thing. But our point is that if we come to the proper understanding of what is human life, what are we doing in this world? What is the transcendence? Who is God? What is our relationship with Him? Then automatically these lower propensities, they won't remain, because first thing we won't become susceptible to such animalistic ideas that I belong to a certain race and we should dominate others, or I belong to a certain community and we should dominate others. Life is more complex than a fridge magnet philosophy. There may be some grounds for that, even within understanding the highest teachings. For instance, it is realistic to accept that within human society there are gradations of people, and that it's not all equal, and that while we're in this world, the intelligent and the strong should dominate the others. That doesn't necessarily mean to dominate them for personal aggrandizement, but for the benefit of others, just like parents dominate their children for the benefit of the child. So philosophy can be very nuanced. It's we shouldn't try to just reduce it to slogans and leave it at that. For instance, even Atato Brahma Jignasa, now we should inquire into the ultimate good, but that doesn't mean that we should neglect the human body or the human condition, because we're in this present situation and we have to live, we have to utilize what we have to pursue the higher goal. Shariramadhyam, what is that? Shariramadhyam kila dharma sadhanam. The body is needed for executing dharma. So that's the point. It's more nuanced than just reducing everything to slogans. It's not wrong in itself to reduce things to slogans, but then we should understand the purpose behind it. Just like we have there these sutras there, like the Brahma Sutras, Atato Brahma Jignasa. In Jamadhyasya Yataha, Shastra Yonitvat, and so on. But the sutras are meant to be commented on and expanded on. It's reduced to a short term so that we can understand the essence, but then we're supposed to understand more. So again, we're very grateful to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada for having given us such a vast understanding of the philosophy of the Absolute Truth, and also for His keeping it simple and clear without putting on any big show of being a big philosopher, but just giving what we needed to understand. Not showy, not a big intellectual show, but rather telling us what we needed to know. So, Krishna willing, I'll continue this discussion in another session. And thank you for listening to this dry philosophy. Srila Prabhupada sometimes used that phrase, referring to his own teaching. How is that possible? Well, he said that you have to give people kirtan and prasadam because most people are not interested in dry philosophy. With the idea that to most people, philosophy is of not much interest. Unfortunately, in the present age, people are not much interested in philosophy. He also referred to philosophy. Hare Krishna. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mokaro na vayam vichara ma yamaha. Hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama dante nidhaya churnakam padayani patya kritvacha kaku shatameda raham ravimi. Hey sadhava sakalameva vihaya durad chaitanya chandra charane kurutanu ragam. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas chakripa sindhu revichakritanam. Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.